بسم الله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. My respected ulama, elders, brothers and sisters in Islam and Iman, we've gathered here for the occasion of celebrating and commemorating the sixth night of Muharram. And as we attend these gatherings, I would like to just spend a moment to remind ourselves about the presence of the Imam of our time and our responsibilities towards him. And a reminder to all of us that the actions that we perform, including attending these majalis, are presented to him, and inshallah they are a source of joy to him. There's a tradition I'd like to share with you. It's a story of somebody who went to see our fifth Imam, Imam Baqir alayhi salam. He had traveled from a distance to be able to meet him. And Abu Basir, who is one of the great companions of our fifth Imam, he reports that when this companion came to the Imam greeted him, and then he asked him about Rashid. He said that, "Tell me about Rashid, how is he doing?" So this man who had come, he had come from a distant country, from Africa. He had traveled all the way to meet the Imam. He was a bit surprised. He said, Rashid's good. You know, when I left, I had seen him right before I left, and he was good. He sends you salam." And the Imam alayhi salam makes a dua for Rashid, and he says, "May Allah have mercy on Rashid." So this man is surprised. He says that, "Do you mean to say that Rashid has passed away?" And the Imam alayhi salam says that, "Yes, he passed away 2 days after you had left. He's died." And he's really surprised, and he says that he was fine, his condition, his health was fine when I left. And the Imam alayhi salam says that everyone passes away for a reason. He got sick after you left and then he passed away. Now Abu Basir, who was standing there, he was very surprised by this exchange that took place. And he asked the Imam at that point, he says that, "Tell me about this man named Rashid. Who is he?" So the Imam alayhi salam says that Rashid is, or he was, one of the people who loves us, and he was somebody who tried to follow our way. And it seems like Abu Basir was really surprised, because the Imam was aware of what happened to him even though he was in a distant land, remote, far away. So the Imam alayhi salam says something. He says that, "Is it the case that you believe that we do not have a'ayunun nadhira aw asma'un sami'a? Do you believe that we do not have eyes that see and ears that hear? Labi'sa ma ra'aytum. If that's the way you see, that how what a poor perspective you have when it comes to us, the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam." He says, "Wallahi, I swear by Allah, there is nothing which is hidden from your actions except that it gets presented to us. So when you present it to us, make sure that you present it in a very beautiful sort of way." This is a reminder for myself and all of you that our actions are presented to the Imam of the time. Inshallah, these gatherings are not just a ritual commemoration. We just, you know, sort of you know, check it off. Yeah, I attended the Muharram gathering. But hopefully it's the case that we're making strong resolutions, big changes, and preparing ourselves and getting ready from now for what we hope, inshallah, will be the soon return of the Imam of our time. If I can ask you to recite the salawat, please. The topic that we have been covering in these nights is to look at some of the perspectives that Imam Hussein alayhi salam gives us that can shake up our perspective. There are some concepts and ideas that we get by living in the society that we need Imam Hussein alayhi salam's perspective to be able to shake these up and to see the reality behind them. Last night we talked about tolerance, and tonight we want to approach a different topic. And I would like to take you to a very famous saying of Imam Hussein alayhi salam when it was clear that Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his army were definitely going to meet the fate of martyrdom. Imam Hussein alayhi salam uttered a very famous saying. He says that inni la ara al-mauta illa sa'adatan wal hayata ma'a al-zalimina illa barama. I see death as being a sa'ada. I see death as being nothing but sa'ada, and I see life with these oppressors as being something which is tiresome and a source of destruction. Now, what does this word sa'ada mean? Sa'ada is a very important term in Islamic context, and it's one of those words that's really hard to translate into English. And it's a word that appears in a form of it appears in the Quran, in Surah Al-Hud, in Surah Hud, where Allah says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم يَوْمَ يَأَتِي لَا يَتَكَلَّمُ نَفْسٌ إِلَّا بِإِذْنِهِ. On that day, no one will speak except the one who has permission from Allah on the Day of Judgment. There will be two groups of people, according to the Quran. فَمِنْهُ شَقِيٌ وَسَعِيدٌ. There will be those who are shaqi and those who are sa'id. Shaqi is somebody who is wretched, somebody who is miserable. And then there is the person who is sa'id. Comes from the word sa'ada. What does sa'ada mean? Sometimes sa'ada is translated as somebody who is prosperous. Sometimes it's translated in English as somebody who is fortuitous or somebody who is lucky. But however we look at it, there is no good equivalent for sa'ada, and perhaps the best that we can get is to use the word happiness. And that's what I'd like to speak about. At least I want to introduce this topic tonight, and inshallah, our time is shortened tonight, but inshallah we can continue tomorrow night. Happiness is a word that we understand in English, and it's something that actually can be used for a lot of different things. And in Islamic context, we have many different words that can be translated as happiness, one of them being sa'ada, but there are other words as well. And you might be wondering, okay, we came here, you know, on the sixth night of Muharram to be able to cry and grieve. Why are we talking about happiness? The reason is because we find this within the words of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. If you translate this as happiness, then what Imam Hussein alayhi salam is saying is that right in the midst of all this calamity and difficulties, he is talking about happiness. And he's saying that my path to shahada and this whole mission is one that is going to lead me and those who are with me to this type of happiness. And so we need to understand that concept as well. Sa'ada is not just any ordinary type of happiness. It's a happiness which is a perfect state of happiness. It's perfect goodness. When somebody is given the full amount and the full potential of what they possibly can be given. And our teachings tell us that that true and ultimate happiness and success can only be gotten in the hereafter. But when it comes to happiness in general, the way that we understand it, it's used for a lot of different things. And what I'd like to do is just introduce a few of the ways that it's talked about, and inshallah we'll get to the details perhaps tomorrow night if Allah gives us the tawfiq. So first of all, happiness, when it comes to how do we understand it, one of the common ways that we as Muslims define happiness is that there are some types of happiness which are halal and some types which are haram. And a lot of people have this understanding. They say that, okay, as long as I'm indulging in things which are halal, I can be as happy as I want and everything will be okay for me. But when we go to the Islamic teachings, there's a deeper understanding. Sometimes it can be the case that even though there's happiness which, there's something which makes somebody happy, it's actually in reality making them very sad. And sometimes, even when it's happiness which is halal, even that can make them sad as well. And so we need to sort of look at this in a deeper perspective. And what I'd like to offer you here is a breakdown that one of the contemporary ulama has given for this concept of happiness. I found it very useful as a way of trying to understand, you know, how can I truly attain happiness? Because that's something that all of us naturally are looking for. We're looking for being able to lead a life of happiness, and we'd like to set our goal to be eternal happiness. So one of the scholars, his name is Ustad Abbasi. He's an expert in the matters of tarbiyah. He says that one of the ways we can distinguish different types of happiness is to divide them between those that are surface level and those which are deep. And then he says that, okay, if you want to be able to sort of distinguish between the two, there's some criteria that you can apply to make, you know, to kind of categorize these. So what I'd like you to do is to think about those things that make you happy. What do you do on a regular basis to drive happiness? And then see which category these happinesses fall into. Is it the type which is surface level or the type which is deep? So one of the characteristics of happiness which is surface level is that it's something which is easy to come by. It doesn't take that much effort in order to be able to attain it. If you think about it, if you want to, for example, watch something or you want to play something, it's very easy. Just press a button and there it is. There are other types of happinesses where it takes some work to be able to get it, but those are not the type typically which are surface level. But surface level happiness is what is easy to come by. Number two, it's happiness which also goes away fast as well. Imagine, for example, you watch your favorite TV show, you watch your favorite movie or whatever it may be. How long does that feeling of pleasure last with it? Typically, you know, it's something which is short-lived. Right? You have your favorite dessert. You know, how long can you stretch that taste which is of the sweetness? Pretty much after it goes down, then it's gone. Number three, surface level happiness is that type of happiness in which people who are looking for it, they don't want any sadness accompanying it. They want to forget about all their sadness. They just want to be happy. And that's something which is very important because in the Western society that we're in, the secular society, the idea is hakuna matata. You know, basically, you know, no problem. Just live a happy life. And that's what's important. Just be happy, right? Forget about your sadness, forget about your grief. Don't grieve. Even, you know, these commemorations and mourning ceremonies that we have, it's something that somebody who isn't used to them, they will be surprised. You spend that much time shedding tears, you spend that much time beating your chest, like why? Right? It's hard for them to understand. Number four, the fourth characteristic is that too much of this type of happiness actually makes you sad. You know, one of the surprising things that you see is that in the modern world, or in the postmodern world, when we have such easy access to things which are supposed to make us happy, for example, like if we want to talk to a friend, we just have to pick up our phone. If we want to watch our favorite show, we just have to press a button. It wasn't like that 20, 30 years ago, right? Despite all of the easy access that we have to things which are supposed to make us happy, on the whole, people are actually getting sadder. One of the frightening statistics that just came out recently, they did a survey of teenagers in the UK, and it was shocking. They said that one out of every four teenage girls is in a state of depression. One out of every four. And if you look at American and Canadian society, it's not something which is too different. You know, you interact with the youth, you try to understand what problems are people facing. There's incredible pressure when it comes to things like body image, you know, social media, shaming and reputations and these sort of things. And with access to all these things, it's actually increased. And number five is that Or number five or six is that when this type of happiness, it doesn't give meaning to life. Meaning the more that you seek it, you find that you're a bit lost. And that's a problem that a lot of people are facing. They don't find a purpose for why they're here. They don't understand the bigger picture. And as they seek these pleasures and happinesses, they don't see it actually taking them to a sense of having purpose, a sense of satisfaction. But on the other hand, there are certain things which you can do which make you happy, but at a much deeper level. It's not a surface level type of happiness, something which is much deeper that penetrates the soul. And that type of happiness is the opposite. It's something which might be hard to get, it might take some effort, but it's something which lasts a lot longer. You know, when you come out of the majalis of Imam Hussein or something, you have a good cry, a sincere cry, how long does it last for you? Right? For a lot of people, it lasts their whole life. Right? They change as individuals. Each year they change and change and change. That type of happiness which is deep, it's something which it can accompany grief as well too. It's not something which is sort of incompatible with it. It's something which takes somebody towards the purpose of why they were created as well, and it gives meaning to their life. Now, we don't have time. Inshallah, tomorrow, if Allah gives us the tawfiq, we'd like to expand upon this topic and give more examples. If I can ask you to recite a salawat, please. I'd like to mention just a few words of musibat, the individuals that I'd like to, inshallah, speak briefly about in the minutes that remain are some very special martyrs of Karbala. Let us take our respect and our salutations to the lady who is known as Ummul Masa'ib, the mother of the griefs, the mother of the tragedies. It's very hard for us, you know, being distant, to be able to fathom the amount of difficulties that this lady, Zainab alayhi salam, had to face. There's one story that's told from our fourth Imam alayhi salam. He says that on the night of Ashura, my aunt was tending to me. I was very sick and she was taking care of me. And I heard that my father was outside of the tent. He was with the great companion Joan. And Joan was sharpening my father's sword. And my father was with him and he was reciting some poetry. He was saying, Ya dahru uffin laka min khalili. Kam laki min bil ishrafi wal asili min sahibin wa talibin qatili. والدهر لا يقنع بالبديل وإنما الأمر إلى الجليل وكل حي هالك سبيلي. A rough translation of that is that, oh time, this time that's passing, how much do you set and then you rise? How many people have come and they have gone? How many have lived and they've been killed? And you will never take somebody else as, you know, in exchange, meaning that when somebody's time comes, they have to leave. And this is a command which is commanded by God. And every living individual is going to take the path that I am taking. And Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says, I heard my father recite that a few times, two times, three times. And I saw that my aunt, she came to understand the deeper meaning of what my father was saying. And she rushed out. And she went to my father and she told him that, oh my brother, am I hearing what you are saying? Just, I'm somebody who has had to face my mother who has passed away. She left this world. And then after her, I lost my father. He also left this world. And then it was time for my brother to leave this world. My brother Hassan alayhi salam. Now are you telling me that you too are going to be leaving me as well? How can I possibly bear this? And it seems that her heart was breaking at that point. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam has to console her and tell her to be patient. But this, brothers and sisters, gives us a little bit of insight as to the love that Zainab alayhi salam has for her brother. It's not an ordinary love. This is a love for a brother and a love for an imam, a love for the Waliullah, for the Khalifatullah on the earth. This is a love of sacrifice. It is a love which she puts above the love of everyone else, including the love of her own children as well too. And this is what we see on the day of Karbala. You know, brothers and sisters, in order to just help us understand the extent of the musibah, I just want to give you one example. They say that during the war that took place, when news would come of shuhada on the battlefield, when they would bring the bodies and the mothers would be waiting, they wouldn't leave the mothers alone. They would always make sure that she was accompanied by other women who could be there to console her as she's receiving the body of her son who had been slain as a martyr. And they say that when the body was particularly mutilated, then they had even more people to accompany her just to support her and give her that consolation. But imagine on the day of Ashura, what sort of grief Zainab alayha salam had to face alone as she sees one by one all of her men and they are going and not coming back. And all the women are looking to her for consolation and she has no one among the human beings to turn to for consolation. Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdillah وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك صلى الله عليك أيها المقتول بكربلاء عطشانا صلى الله عليك وعلى أختك زينب Peace be upon you, Sayyid al-Shuhada, O Imam Hussein, O pure soul, O ship of salvation. Peace be upon you and upon your noble sister, the mother of all calamities. On the day of Ashura, Zainab had so much to sacrifice. There comes a point when her sons are not ready for the battle. Not once in any of the maqatil that I have seen have I seen that she is even hesitant a moment to let her sons go to the battlefield. This is, after all, a cause of sacrifice for the Imam of the time. Own and Muhammad valiantly go forward to the battlefield. Own cries out, "In tunkiruni, fa anabnu Ja'fari, shahidi sidqin fil jinani azhari, yatiru fiha bijanahin akhdari, kafa bihada sharafan fil mahshari." If you don't know me, then you should know that I am the son of Ja'far, the martyr, the one who flies in the heavens with the wings. He flies with these green wings that have been given to him. That enough is honor for somebody in the hereafter. Aun and Muhammad fight valiantly against the enemy army, but eventually they fall to the ground. Not once do we see that Zainab alayha salam was overly concerned with this. After all, this is a source of happiness for her, a sacrifice. But when we see that the son of Imam Hussein alayhi salam falls to the ground, Zainab alayha salam can contain herself no more. She rushes out of her tent, she cries out, "Wa Habiba, Wa Aliya, O my beloved Ali Akbar." Ala la'natullahi 'ala al-qawmi al-zalimin, wa say'alamu al-lazina zalamu ayya munqalibin yanqalibun.